Zella has no such.
We are, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to ask Mr. Pinkleton to come up and present his report from Administration of Financial Affairs. I'd also like to mention that the university and campus will be seeing external auditors on campus beginning next week. And I think that we have everyone in place, Michael, to make sure that that goes smoothly. And I'm looking forward to another good year with our external auditors. Mr. Pinkleton.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, distinguished trustees. For the record, my name is Larry Pinkleton, Interim Vice President of Administration and Finance. Briefly, I'd like to share with you just a couple of announcements on what has transpired in the Administration and Finance Division over the last couple of months since we met. We do have a major initiative going through the accounts payable function right now. It's the introduction of a software program that will be leveraged on top of the university's ERP system. It's referred to as Settlement Manager. The objective of this program is to assist in the efficiency from a processing standpoint of all the paperwork that flows through the accounts payable function. As you know, we have had some challenges over the last several years in dealing with the volume that runs through the accounts payable function, and so this is really a ploy to address the efficiency agenda in addition to increasing accuracy of the processing of paperwork that goes through that department. Second, the administration finance function has been aggressively involved with the facilities operation over the last several months, trying to position the body of work that's going on in the Jones Convocation Center. There's a remediation project that is affecting that facility, and one of the initiatives that is very near and dear to my heart is the introduction of a more robust concessions model that would be supporting the university. This is intended to assist in driving alternate revenue streams through the third-party dining vendor. Our dining vendor, Sodexo, will be operating the concessions in the JCC, and so we've been involved with discussions to increase the customer service component, increase the types of offerings that will be made at the JCC, and just basically have conversations around enhancing the infrastructure. And then finally, as Trustee Zolar did allude to, as far as announcements are concerned, we will be having the external auditors join the operation on this coming Monday at 9 o'clock. We've got an entrance conference scheduled, and so there's been a lot of preliminary work being done behind the scenes across the entire institution, administration, finance, compliance, and really all the departments in attempts to gearing up for the external auditors coming on campus. I'd like to draw your attention to a cash position report. Has it been handed out?
Yes.
Okay. You should have in front of you a cash position report that is dated May 1st. This report indicates a balance in of cash in the bank of $18.2 million. Factoring in the restricted components of our cash position, we yield a unrestricted balance of approximately $13.1 million. Looking at a projection over the next 90 days, making provision for several collections that we anticipate, we'll be receiving approximately $20.7 million. Expenditures over that same 90-day time period we're projecting to be approximately $30.6 million, leaving us with a balance of estimated of approximately $3.3 million. And then that final figure there that you see in brackets would be where the university would be in the event that we did receive any hiccups from the state as far as reimbursements is concerned. But I'm very pleased up until this point we've not had any hiccups, so we do not anticipate any challenges meeting the university's financial obligations over the next 90 days. In terms of the total state appropriation status, we for fiscal year 14 had a state appropriation of $42.2 million rounded. To date, we have received payments from the state of approximately $24.9 million, which constitutes 59% of our state appropriation, suggesting that the balance due is $17.2 million. And then as we look to push through the balance of the fiscal year, we have sent expenditures to the state of approximately $34.2 million, representing 81% of our budget.
If I may,
the projected balance at the end of 90 days, that $3 million figure?
Yes.
Isn't that dangerously low? I don't recall our balance being that low before.
Well, I wouldn't characterize it as dangerously low, okay?
Low.
throughout the course of the year, our cash balance does ebb and flow. And so we are in the time period of the year where revenues do tend to, you know, drop off. We've received the majority of our cash infusions from the state and from our tuition revenue in the fall and the spring, early part of the fall and the early part of the spring. So this is that down period where we've got less money coming in and a modest amount of money going out. So as you can see, if we just compare that to the prior year, we're down a couple million dollars. The column right to the neck to the the immediate right. Okay, so this is pretty much typical in terms of the seasonality of our cash flows. So I do not anticipate at this point any challenge again meeting the financial obligations of the university. Okay. Moving on, I do have a couple of resolutions I'd like to bring to the trustees' attention.
Before you do, are there any other questions with respect to what's just been presented? Okay, thank you.
Okay, the first resolution I'd like to bring your attention to is for tuition waivers. Going into the fiscal year 15 time period, we are very much in the budget preparation process. We have not received all of the information that we need to finalize our fiscal year 15 plan. There's still a fair amount of information which is outstanding. The state appropriation is still in a state of flux. But we are hoping that will be brought to our attention in terms of what the final number will be sometime over the next 30 to 45 days. That being said, we are moving forward with some of the components of the fiscal year 15 budget build. One of those is for tuition waivers. You've got a resolution in front of you that speaks to our desire to maintain programming consistent with fiscal year 14 going into fiscal year 15. University has not made any decisions to alter the expectation around support going into the fiscal year 15 time period. And so this resolution that you have in front of you is very comparable to the figure that we had budgeted from a total expense standpoint in fiscal year 14. We're asking for your authority to budget approximately $1.9 million going into fiscal year 15.
The other day you gave me a very good explanation of the difference between a tuition waiver and a scholarship. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you'll give that same explanation to the other board members.
Okay. The difference between a tuition waiver and a scholarship. A scholarship would be considered expense. A tuition waiver would basically be considered a reduction in the tuition that accrues to the university as a result of that student. So it's really just two different sides of the same coin. The bottom line effect to the university is a reduction in cash flow. Again, there are alternate strategies that the university has in place to handle this concept of tuition waiver. As an example, if you are a employee of the university or employee of any state institution, you can come to Chicago State University and take up to 6 credit hours per semester. And the tuition associated with those two classes would be, quote, waived. Okay, so again, that would be a reduction in revenue which would normally accrue to the university as a result of an individual taking a class. The converse of that is scholarship expense, again, which would be an expense which accomplishes pretty much the same thing. Any other questions concerning the tuition and fees revenue? I'm sorry, the tuition waivers resolution.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask for a motion to adopt the resolution?
So move.
Second.
Thank you.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zauer?
Yes.
The second resolution I'd like to bring to the Board of Trustees' attention is concerning academic fees. The university is introducing two graduate study abroad programs, two graduate study abroad courses going into the fiscal year 14 time period, the fall 14 time period. And as a result of introducing those classes to provide infrastructure support for those classes in terms of software and other accommodations that would be needed for the students to actually register and take those classes, we're going to be introducing a $20 fee. This is a strategy which is very consistent with many classes across the entire university. And so this concept, we're asking to be added on to these two classes. They're foreign language classes, and we're going to be introducing them in the fall of 2014. Any questions?
Hearing no questions, Mr. Chairman, again, I'm asking for a motion to adopt the resolution respect to the abroad courses.
Second.
Trustee Cardin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Raina?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Golar?
Yes.
The final resolution we're going to share with you today, I've asked one of my colleagues, Dr. Lisa Young, to share with you the specifics around the student health insurance rate resolution.
Good morning, trustees, President Watson, and attendees.
Good morning, Dr. Young.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Young. I'm the director of the Wellness and Health Center here at the university, and I want to present a resolution related to the student health insurance increase. Chicago State University currently has a mandatory student health insurance, which is what they consider a hard waiver. Students who are undergraduate students with 12 hours or more, undergraduate students with 9 hours or more, and doctoral students with 6 hours or more must show proof of their insurance. If they don't have insurance, then they are required to take the university's mandatory health insurance. The university's mandatory health insurance is underwritten by the United Healthcare Student Resources. And the previous plan the students had was pretty good. It was what they considered a plan that there was 80% coverage with 20% out-of-pocket and $150 deductible. When the Affordable Care Act came into play, the plan that they currently have fell between what they call a gold and a platinum plan. If you're familiar with the Affordable Care Act, there are four metallic plans. There's a bronze plan, then the next plan is a silver, then there's gold, and there's platinum. The higher the plan, the less out-of-pocket expense. The lower the metallic plan, the more out-of-pocket expense. So the plan that the students currently had fell between a gold and a platinum plan. The students elected to, they either one, had to go down in coverage to a gold plan, which was really kind of what they already had, or they could elect to go up and have increased coverage and take a platinum plan. It was taken to the Student Government Association, and the Student Government Association discussed it with different students and also graduate students and the College of Pharmacy and doctoral students as well, to see which plan would be best for the student body. And they voted to go with the platinum plan, which resulted in a 6.23% increase in their current premium. They will be paying, they voted to have a maximum out-of-pocket. They voted up to $603 per semester. However, it came to $591, which is $571 per semester for the premium and $20 for the administrative cost. So what happens is it comes out of their financial aid and the total cost is $591 per semester. And the students elected to go with the higher plan, which is the platinum coverage. That covers 90% with 10% out of pocket, $150 deductible. That deductible is waived if they use the services of the Wellness and Health Center. And there are no pre-existing conditions, and there's no lifetime limits.
I have a question, please. The mandatory insurance, is that for the student only, or do they also have the ability to cover family members?
It's for the students, but they also have the ability to cover their family at an additional cost. It also, if there are any part-time students who would like to prefer to take our coverage versus take the ones that they have offered in the marketplace for the state of Illinois, they have the option to do that as well as an option. Any questions?
Are there any other questions? Hearing none, Mr. Chairman.
I move we adopt the resolution.
I second.
Trustee Carden?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Absolutely.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Thank you.
Just a couple more comments concerning the fiscal year 15 budget cycle. One of the comments that Dr. Eccleston alluded to earlier, she made a statement that our fiscal year 15 goal for enrollment was 3%. I just wanted to make clear that that's a planning assumption from a budgetary standpoint. And so to the extent that some of the numbers that are coming in at this point might cause us to revise that planning assumption, that's an ongoing discussion that management will have internally in terms of recognizing the potential impact of that in building our fiscal year 15 plan. And then finally, we will be bringing a couple of resolutions into the June Board of Trustee meeting to finalize the fiscal year 15 budget build. Our expectation by that point is that we would have more definitive information at our disposal from the state on what the appropriation will look like. And so we will be wrapping up all the decisions that we need to implement the fiscal year 15 plan over the next 30 to 45 days and be bringing a final set of resolutions to your attention during that time period. Are there any other questions?
Thank you very much for your report, Mr. Pinkleton.
Thank you.
Mr. Shindy? As you all know, Mr. Shindy represents information technology. How are you today?
I'm fine, Trustee. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good morning, Trustees. President Watson, from IT perspective, we have four items on our agenda. The first item is the disaster recovery resolution. As you know, the university has a process. If at all there is a disaster in our data center, for example, if there is a fire and some of our servers burn down, then we still need to continue our operations online. We have a process in place whereby we back up our data. We back up our data on a daily basis. We take it to the bank. If there is a disaster, we have a site off campus. It's in Wooddale where we can restart our services. So the resolution that we have in front of us today is to take the human out of the equation. So today, the DBAs take the tape to the bank. If there is a disaster, this person will take the tape from the bank to the offsite location. So there is a human involved. With this resolution, we will back up our servers online every night. And in case there is a disaster, we will be able to recover the services immediately without having the need to even go there. So it's really instantaneous for us. The company that we will be, that we will work with, we are already working with it. It's just to back up our data online. That's the portion that the resolution is for.
And so that backup is off-site.
That's correct.
Okay. Great. That's important. I asked that for
yes.
a specific
yes.
reason. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And it's done completely online. Every night it's done automatically.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Are there any questions with respect to the disaster recovery plan? Then I'd like to ask, Mr. Chairman, that there be a motion to adopt the resolution with respect to that?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Carden?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. The second item on our agenda is the network equipment purchase. In the last Board of Trustees meeting, I did mention that the university has increased the network speeds by at least 6 to 8 times from where we were last fall. It's a tremendous improvement, and our students appreciate it. Our faculty have expressed their appreciation because they now trust the network speeds. They believe that they can teach online with the current network speeds. And there is an opportunity to even double the speeds that we have. One of the biggest hurdles today is the equipment that we have in our data center that manages our network. It was purchased 8 to 10 years ago. 8 to 10 years ago, that was the state-of-the-art technology, but it's really slow today for us. Yeah. And the resolution here is to request approval to upgrade the technology that we have so we can provide even better speeds to our students. The network speeds in the residence hall will increase. The wireless network in the library will increase. So it's eventually our students and faculty members who will see that the increase in speed.
And the cost attendant to this resolution?
The costs are about $680,000 over a period of 5 years. And that includes maintenance of the equipment as well.
Excellent. Are there any questions with respect to increasing our speed?
I move we adopt the resolution.
A second.
Trustee Carden?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you. The third item on our agenda is the university cabling service. So to give you an example again, let's say we have a new employee on campus, or a unit chooses to move from one location to the other. This unit needs a telephone connection, and it needs data connection to be able to connect to the internet. At that time, today we have to contact companies like AT&T, Blackbox, to ask for a quote to install this data connection for us. Sometimes the quote is about $800 per drop. It could be $700 per drop, depending on the location. And that delays the process. We may have to wait for a quote for 2 or 3 weeks. And at the same time, it's expensive. So this resolution is to request board's approval to go through an RFP process, whereby we let these big companies literally fight among themselves to give us the best price. So if this resolution is approved and we go through the RFP process, we know what the company will charge us to put that network connection for us. At the very best price that we can get. So instead of waiting for the company to give us a quote for each network connection, we have a contract with them at a predetermined cost for us. It's going to be beneficial for the university.
Do you have an estimate of how much money this will save the university? And
at this point, I do not have an estimate, I'm sorry, but previously, the network connections have been as high as about $800 on one drop. And I suspect that it will be at least half of it from what we pay today.
How often are we going out for this type of job, I think, is what the chairman may be alluding to.
For big projects, it may be once a month. But for minor projects, it could be, I would say, once every 2 weeks or so.
So you're suggesting that we can see a 50% saving if
yes.
we do the RFP process?
Yes.
Any other questions? Mr. Chairman?
I move we adopt the resolution.
Second.
Trustee Carden?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Reyna?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you. The last item on our agenda today for IT is information security policy resolution. This is our second hearing. Previously, I did mention that the university is going through an IT risk assessment. The risk assessment identifies computers that either hold confidential information or have access to confidential information. We've gone through a rigorous process and we've encrypted the computers that hold this confidential information. And it's an ongoing process, and we want to document it in form of a policy. It's pretty much to ensure that the data, such as social security numbers, bank information, is stored and accessed confidentially. It's not open to public. Even unintentionally. A policy like this is in place at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign since 2004. It's in place at NIU, Northern Illinois, since 2009. And we've been going through the process every year, but it's recommended that we have a policy in place which really acts as a guiding document to ensure that our data, our confidential data, is not out in the hands of people who shouldn't have access to it.
Mr. Shindy, this is our second reading,
yes.
So we are familiar with it, and all of the board members have spoken to you about this before, and we have considered it before. I would like to just mention again, Mr. Chairman, that we have external auditors coming in. I'd
yes.
love to see this policy in place immediately.
Yes. Yes.
So to that extent, if it would be possible, I would like to move that we waive the third reading of this policy and proceed to adopt the resolution.
I second the motion.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Wayna?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you,
Thank
trustees.
You, Mr. Shindy. That's the end, Mr. Chairman, of our Finance and Audit Committee report.
We will move on to a facilities update. Mrs. Horton.
Good morning to all on the roster.
Good morning.
I just wanted to add a comment regarding the question about the second dorm. It could also allow us to build for the non-traditional student. It's been mentioned that we're building the child care center. And there are those who, right now, the dormitory fits the traditional student model, which does not allow for their siblings or children to accompany them in the residence hall. And the potential to build for our demographic here at the university would be a great opportunity for the second dorm.
So you're suggesting that we could be building for family units?
Absolutely, yes.
Perfect, thank you.
I'd like to make mention from our report, Physical Facilities has applied for the water rate exemption from the Department of Water in Chicago for 25%, which is the largest offered to Chicago State. We were notified that we received this exemption, which will render a 25% off of our water bill. Second point.
That's always good news.
That's always good. I wish that could happen in my house. The second point would be Facilities has also received a grant from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity towards our current CSU recycling program. This comes after an extensive effort by several to include Jeff Melton, our environmental specialist, Dr. Carol Jacobs with Buildings and Grounds, myself, and the CSU Ecology Club. So I just wanted to make mention of their extensive efforts on this, for which we do have a resolution today to ask the board to allow us to administer the grant. So if there are not any other questions on the report.
Any questions or comments regarding the resolution?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the resolution as presented.
Second.
Trustee Wayna?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Zoller?
Yes.
Thank you.
Now we'll hear from the Legislative and Human Resources update.
Hello again.
Hi.
Farrah Muscadin, Director of Intergovernmental Affairs. Oddly enough, you wouldn't think so, but it is a little quiet in Springfield. I think that the legislature is figuring out what they want to do with the income tax that is set to expire, I believe, July 1. If the legislature allows the income tax to expire, then they have to fill that revenue somehow. And generally, that means cuts to education. They haven't decided what they're going to do. That's why you haven't heard much talk about the budget yet, because they haven't really started talking about it. As much, I think they will in a week or two. Well, because they have to. A lot of, clearly, the discussions have been around pension reform and the pension bill that was passed in December and the impact of it on public universities and community colleges. Many public universities, particularly U of I, are facing what they consider a mass exodus of people retiring June 1. There was what CSRS, the State University Retirement System, has described as a drafting error in the pension reform bill from December, which has caused people to retire sooner than they would normally. It does not appear that they will fix it legislatively. However, they have filed a bill, but the bill hasn't moved to fix it, and it doesn't appear that it will move. So I think for the most part, CSRS is looking into other ways of interpreting the language that may mitigate the potential mass retirement. But I think from our perspective, if Dr. Mitchell was here, she'd probably say that we have to proceed as the law stands now. And so we do have people retiring, and the university has to act accordingly until the laws change or we get other notice from CSRS. But I have had communication with several legislators who have requested our capital projects, which I find very interesting and optimistic, because I've received the request from numerous legislators. So I wanted to inform you of what we put on the table as our ask. One is an additional $20 million for the Westside campus. Mr. Washington explained to you what phase two would be about $19, $20 million, so we requested that. We've also requested $51 million for the Robinson Center. We really need those dollars. We have a space issue on campus, and so being able to renovate that building would mitigate and solve a lot of our spacing problems on campus. And we have a plan for what we want the Robinson Center to be. We want it to be a one-stop shop for students where they can go and take care of all of their university business in one place. One of our state reps, he's not actually a state rep of CSU, but he basically is, because his district is just adjacent, said that he would put it on his list of asks, the $51 million for the Robinson Center, and personally ask the governor for that money. So I'm very optimistic that if there is a capital bill, that our request will be included. And the $20 million for Westside and the $51 million for the Robinson Center would be major for the university. Some other asks that I have been told by numerous legislators that we can pretty much stop asking is additional funding for the daycare center. The Black Caucus has taken that on as an initiative and had a meeting with the governor about it and basically said that he supports it and we will receive additional money for the daycare center. So I'm very optimistic about that. We need other dollars for the library, fixing the exterior repairs, that's $4 million. You all know about our aquaponics program, we wanna grow that program, that's $3 million. And then the simulated hospital, we're requesting $8.4 million for that. And then we need some improvements to our roadways around campus. So those are the items that made our list of requests for a capital bill. Generally speaking, you have to get it in early or have it ready when the legislator asks. So not only do we have it ready, they already have it. So our asks are on the table. People know what they are. And if they work out a revenue source for the capital bill, then I'm very optimistic that we will get the projects that we need for this campus. And then more specifically in regards to our FY15 budget, we've had to do several exercises in regards to potential reductions from 20% to 12.4%. Again, because this is tied to the income tax, I'm not quite sure where it's gonna land. The presidents and chancellors have asked for a flat budget. A flat budget, meaning what we got last year, would be actually very good for CSU because we actually received more funding than any public university last year. So if the legislature is able to maintain a flat budget for CSU, that would be very good for us. We are asking Last year, you know, we received $4.6 million from the gaming fund for scholarships for our students. The agreement was 1.6 on an annual basis. Obviously, you know how successful that program was for our students. We're asking for $4.6 million again to go exclusively to our students for scholarships. So we know we're going to get the 1.6, but we want the $3 million additional, and we've made that request. Pharmacy gets a grant of $307,000. Right now, they're thinking about another way to fund it. I pretty much told them that as long as we get the $307,000, I don't know if we really have a specific interest in terms of how they fund it. So that list is on the table for the pharmacy to receive that grant. And then we're asking for additional funding for the satellite sites for the Westside campus to fund that. And then we have to start the conversation about operating dollars for the West Side, and we anticipate that's $4.5 million. So we've initiated those conversations because clearly we can't take operating for the West Campus from our current operating budget. So we need to start working on that, particularly when we're looking at a FY16, FY17 launch for the campus. We really need to have those conversations early. So that it's on the legislator's mind when they are doing the budget. And we have had those conversations. Last but not least, most of our legislative agenda is really around financing, but we do have one policy issue, and we've kind of had a theme about compliance today and audit. We had an audit finding, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, about the high school feedback system. And this was an act passed in, I think, 1985, 89, when there was a Board of Governors and all the public universities were under it. And it called for all the public universities to come together and do one report about how their high school students are doing at their particular universities. Well, clearly, it's just unrealistic for that to happen in our current setup, because obviously each public university has their own Board of Trustees. So because it is a law on the books and no one's really done the report, everybody's got dinged on it in terms of audit. So I initiated the process and I worked with my counterpart at Western Illinois to put forth legislation to just completely repeal the act. It's unnecessary, and we already do the report as part of a requirement with the IBHE. So that bill has already passed the House. It is sitting on the Senate floor and will probably be voted on next week. And so the governor will sign it. And so that will alleviate any future audit findings on this particular issue. So that was the one policy thing that we had this year. And it was great because we were able to work collectively with all the public universities to address it and get the bill passed. Lastly, on the federal side, we are really working hard to build relationships with the federal agencies to increase our grant dollars. Because obviously with state funding being so tight, we need other revenue sources. And those revenue sources generally will come from the federal government. So we're working very hard to build those relationships, to apply for the grants that are out there. We're looking at one particular grant to potentially fund our Women's Resource Center. So hopefully that we'll be able to receive dollars from that grant. And then we are still working on our Metro project. I haven't talked to you about that in a while. It's still a top priority. Obviously, Metra is the lead, and I'm just kind of the annoying person that calls them to make sure that they're on task. So they have an RFP out for an architect to design it. That's in the process. They have informed me that they plan that it will be concluded by the end of the quarter. And we are meeting, obviously, you know, there's been some significant changes at Metra. We are meeting with the new executive director on May 20th to ensure that, you know, we're still on task, we're still on plan for this project, because we need that. We've identified the grant that they need to apply for, but they have to apply for it.
But what is the project?
The project is completely renovating the Metra station right at 97th and Cottage. So we had a couple plans of, one included moving it back further south and doing a completely new station, but Metro preferred that we just use the tracks on where it is now. And so our goal is to do a completely new redesign of the Metro station. It would be the CSU station, right? So we're trying to have CSU station on Metro, on our east, and then CTA, which would be instead of the 95th, Dan Ryan stop, we want it to be, we've talked with CTA to have it be the CSU station, 95th CSU station, so we would have CSU on both ends, east and west. And it would be a complete redesign. I don't know if you've driven by there lately. It's a little scary. And we think that the improvements would help with, increased enrollment from a different constituency from the south suburbs. We think it's a definite asset to our employees and our staff who use Metra, because we have some employees who go to 55th Street to take the bus back because they don't want to get off at 95th. And so it's a completely new redesign and reconstruction of it. I'll share with you the plan and the picture. It's actually very beautiful.
I'm sorry, but I thought 95th Street was just redeveloped. Was it not?
The line itself was redeveloped, but the actual station was not. They're now going to spend tens of millions of dollars to redesign it.
Okay. On the Metro side.
And we are in discussion with certain individuals to try to ensure that that is named Chicago State. Because as you know, Chicago, University of Chicago has that named after them, IIT, et cetera. So we're asking for the same kind of level playing field. An opportunity.
Fantastic.
And we've built a really good partnership with Metra, and we're really cultivating it because this is a long-term kind of relationship that we'll have with them. The cost of the project overall to completely redo the station is, I believe, $12 million. And so we have, Dr. Watson met with the former Federal Department of Transportation Secretary, who was very supportive of the project and told us what grant we need to keep an eye out on. But since it has to go through the transit agency, we really kind of stay on top of Metro to make sure that it's their priority. And last year they allocated $800,000 for the design. And so we really kind of stayed on top of them to make sure they push forward with the RFP and get that in process. Because just because it's our priority doesn't necessarily make it their priority.
Right.
So we tend on making it their priority by being persistent and talking to them on a regular basis to move it forward.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. One, Metro makes me think of our Washington lobbyist, Mr. Boykin, who congratulations to him for winning an election and about to become a county commissioner. Will he still be able to perform as our lobbyist in Washington, or will we be looking for someone else?
No, he's still able to perform. I'm still in constant contact with Richard Boykin, and the benefit of the firm that we selected is that we can utilize all the resources at the firm. So I talked pretty frequently with the lobbyists on their team that live in DC and their lobbyists that are in Chicago as well. And so, if, for example, Richard may not be available, which he generally always is, I have met their whole team. And I can't remember, Craig's last name, Burkhart is one of the lobbyists that is in DC that I talk to pretty frequently. Nicole Janis is another lobbyist that I talk to. And they have been really helpful. When we went to DC, we brought several deans down to DC to have meetings with the various federal agencies. It was their DC office that really helped navigate all of that. And I think I had to attend a meeting with Dr. Watson, with the Deputy Secretary from the Department of Agriculture, and their DC lobbyists attended the meeting in Mark Kirk's office because we have had conversations with Mark Kirk's office about clearly Entrepreneur Idol and money that he has for violence prevention. So they're able to help, facilitate that. So it's not just Richard and Nicole, we kind of have a whole team, and that was the benefit of going with a firm.
And my second question, I don't know whether you can answer it or it's better for Dr. Watson to answer it, but assuming there's no change in the pension law, how hard is the university going to be hit June 1st with retirements?
Well, we won't be as hit as hard as the University of Illinois, but we do have, I think, a significant number of retirements, and I think the key to it is the notice. We do receive the notice, and so that we can plan in advance for that. So for example, I just received notice for someone in our counseling center, so that allows me time to work with that person as they're leaving, do a transition period, and then bring somebody in pretty quickly. That gives me enough time to bring somebody in to address that. And I'm sure probably from the academic standpoint, it helps that it's over the summer, because then the provost has time over the summer to fill positions from a faculty perspective. But I do think that particularly with the nuance of, and I don't want to get too technical, but the problem in the pension bill is that there is a, they wrote 2013 when they meant to write 2014. And so what that means is that for some people, they would lose a year of eligibility. And so when CERS has a website where you go in, you put your information in your calculation, because the way the law stands, people are at risk of losing a lot of money per month from their annuity. And so, you know, given that and given kind of the greater issues with pensions in terms of the fact that it's gonna take longer to retire, and the cost of living has changed, I think people are just taking advantage of the opportunity just to retire now. But I mean, I think from an administrative perspective, we just have to plan.
Well, that's my question. It seems like it would be very difficult to replace a lot of PhDs over the summer.
Yeah. And that is a challenge.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it in a very strategic way.
Okay.
Remember, we have right-sized our students. Therefore, this may be an opportunity for us to right-size our classes and our faculty. You know, we need to reassess that. We're operating with, you know, so that is a statement in itself, all right? And then with regards to the university as a whole in terms of administrators, we're losing some absolutely key, some absolutely valuable administrators, as well as some valuable faculty. This is without a doubt encouraging individuals to retire early. A number of individuals who we definitely would prefer to stay on. We, like the University of Illinois, are trying to figure out every creative way possible to try to encourage or build a bridge for some of these individuals to stay on and continue to work with us.
And there's, can I just do a distinguishing factor? We have pension on one side, and then when we have return to work on the other. And return to work is the bill that is specifically for CSRS, that if you are a CSRS annuitant, right, it restricts whether or not you can come back and work for a CSRS entity, which would be a public university or community college. So we have some people in that group that are CSRS annuitants that want to come back to work that may not be able to because they're receiving their pension. And then we have a group of people who just are affected by pension reform. And some of that might even overlap too. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with a couple different animals all at the same time, but it's all related to pensions.
And then in the midst of all that, CSRS is still, and they will admit it, they are still trying to interpret what the law means.
Exactly.
And they are sending out letters probably every other week with a new interpretation, saying, oh, now we have interpretation of, and they changed something. So for the last, you know, so every 2 weeks or every month, sometimes we get a different interpretation of something that they told us the month before. And the presidents of the universities, you know, we're in a very difficult situation, as well as our faculty. That's why yesterday, you know, late as yesterday, some individuals are saying, I'm retiring. This late a date, we're being notified. But I cannot blame those faculty.
And so as you know, Chairman, when there's pending litigation, the legislature's not going to touch the issue. You know what I'm saying? So even though it is a drafting error, it's so unlikely that they're going to touch it. I did hear news, but I'm a little reluctant to say it because I haven't seen it publicly, and I haven't seen anything in writing, but that there's going to be a request for a stay. Now, if there's a request for a stay, that changes it, because what that means is that you're literally putting the implementation of the act on hold, and then it's the status quo. But if I am a potential retiree, I don't know if I could wait on the court deciding whether or not they're going to grant to stay, and especially when I haven't seen the motion, you know what I mean? Nothing's been public about it, but there's talk in Springfield that there's going to be a stay, but it hasn't happened yet.
Trustees, we know for sure that about 11 faculty members are retiring because they actually put in what we call a final four, 4 years in advance, and that's according to their contract. So we celebrated the 11 this month, or in April, and so we were already making plans to address those retirements. And so as they come in day to day, I'm working very closely with the chairs and the deans and with human resources and with our institutional effectiveness director to look at the numbers, you know, how many students are in the majors, how many students do we have enrolled in those programs, and we'll be watching them very closely throughout the summer because it is difficult to replace in certain areas, replace PhDs. But with that said, over the last 2 years, we've embarked on a project to look at our class sizes. Our class sizes aren't very high in all of our programs. And for example, when we get to our 4,000 level classes, they often are merged with our graduate classes to ensure that we have enough students in those programs. So we have room for growth in some of our programs and in some of our classrooms, and we'll be looking at that very closely. Of course, we're not looking to overpopulate, but going over 15 and 20 won't overpopulate our classrooms. So we're looking at that as well.
Assuming, again, no changes in the law, when will we know for sure how many of our faculty we're going to lose to retirement?
June 30th, we'll know for sure.
June 30th.
Yes. But what happens is they're doing their calculations. Some are going down to Springfield. SIRS was here, I think, a week ago. And so some people we know already, they just haven't put it in writing. But June 30th, we'll know for sure.
Chief, I understand. You know that day well.
Right. Actually, it's a little bit before. They've said that it's actually June 28th before. So our faculty who are teaching summer school, we've had to make accommodations for like the last 2 or 3 days of their classes because they can't work up until June 30th if they have to stop by June 27th.
Any other questions?
I do have one other question that doesn't relate to this topic, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Muscadin, you mentioned in passing that the legislators all had, you know, they know what our requests are. But I don't understand the request with respect to, you said something, hospital.
Oh, the simulated
virtual.
Hospital.
A virtual hospital. Yeah, virtual. What is
hospital.
That about, please?
Let's see. Is Monique still here? Maybe Monique can.
It's an interdisciplinary simulated laboratory approach where we have the College of Pharmacy, College of Nursing, Health Studies, where they can actually go to, their students can go to an actual simulated nursing station or a simulated triage so that our students can then have kind of hands-on real life experience. And so we want to actually build that on the second floor of Douglas Hall. It's our vision with the president to make Douglas Hall kind of the health studies hub with the Wellness Center, College of Pharmacy, and other programs that are there. So the interdisciplinary approach is something that's trending now, and we want to actually do that. And so it would give a great opportunity for all of the health studies departments to work together and for our students to have kind of more hands-on, real-life experience.
Sounds like a very good idea.
And that request is $8.4
million. Right, $8.4 million.
And from an academic perspective, this is one. Can I say from an academic perspective, not many universities have this simulation or this virtual hospital, but if you walk in and if you're an occupational therapy student, a nursing student, a health studies student, community health, pharmacy, you can walk in and it will look like a hospital and there'll be training in classrooms or rooms that look like an actual state-of-the-art hospital. And so our students, they're already prepared, but they will be even more prepared through technology and the simulation to go out into the workforce and work anywhere. So that project was started, or the vision for it was started about 3 or 4 years ago. And so we're happy to finally get the funding. It'll free up some space in some of the other buildings because all healthcare programs will be in that one building. And as Monique said, they will get a chance to work together as students, and our faculty will do more interdisciplinary projects together, from faculty development and in writing grants.
Fantastic, thank you.
Any more questions, comments? Thank you, Fair. Right. We'll now hear our report from our student trustee.
Is it my turn?
It's your turn.
Mm-hmm. I'm usually not at a loss for words, but I am completely at a loss for words at what I was going to say today. And I will always and first most always give God the thanks and be grateful for one more day and the ability to serve on this board with such wonderful human beings. I mean that. And today, in my hand, I hold my dad's old seminary book, and I'd like to translate something that I just read, thinking I'm speechless. I kind of don't know what to say for the students on behalf of the students, but I will be speaking for all of the students, is that the rude realities of life demand so much time from us that we often forget that the purpose of life is not death. Today, I want to remind you of what my position as a student trustee is. I don't want to cause you fear. I want to edify, not crucify. I want to encourage you, not discourage you. But today, I recognize that there are some people in the audience that have utilized their freedom of speech to disseminate, aggravate, and create and disrupt. And today, I'm going to use my freedom of speech to say the right thing, what is right, and clarify. But I want to begin with this. The student trustee is the absolute advocate for all students. I have sent out student concerns and issues to most of the departments, and thank you so much for those of you that have responded. I have still yet to hear back from the pharmacy department and one more other department, and I don't understand why. Because the reason is, it's not to crucify, it's to edify, it's to make the organization better and your department better. Last night, I was on the phone, and the night before, with students that are graduating. And I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to start, because I made a list, positive and negative. And we're going to go with the negative, and we're going to end with the positive, because that is the greatest thing that CSU does here. And these students, all of us graduate and undergraduates, came to a realization, myself included, and I apologize, because being ill and being stressed, and you know, I mean, I'm not a kid, I've been around the block, but for a long time, this position and being a student and having other students and other professors attack you for being genuine and sincere and honest takes its toll on anybody and everybody, and we know that that is all true. And for someone who is a future physician, I'm a compassionate person, which means that your pain is in my heart. And so I've always, always been here as an advocate for the students first, not to get in your face, but to make sure that the same way that Dr. Henderson and Cherie and Dr. Watson and everybody and all the wonderful staff members, Dr. Roundtree, thank you, my dean, you know, that the same way that they have taken the time to sit down with me and say, let's fix this, we come to a solution. without being combative. The students today asked me to talk about solidarity. But I wanted to talk about what has transpired in my life and my career here. That is the story of all of the students, because when I ran for Board of Trustee the first spring semester, that was the platform that I told them. And when we redid it again, that was the platform that I told them, I will have your back. I will tell you, but I've been through the ringer. I've had deans that I've gone and talked to that have absolutely humiliated me in their office and have spoken to me in a way that has degraded me, demeaned me, and made me lose from my own faith and my ability to do well. But it was people like Dr. Watson and his staff and administrators and deans like Dr. Roundtree and even Dr. Arnold and even deans like Dr. Nelly Maynard that said, it's going to be all right. And edified, and even Dr. Young, that gave me a hug. That's why I hugged everybody at the Convocation Center, because I'm appreciating you. I've had terrible customer service. I've had a no before I've had a yes. I've had a no, and then I said, is there anything else that we can do here to make us, you know, go forward, and, you know, I'm going to go upstairs, and no. Why do they create a policy and then make me do this, and then I go back, and then they say a yes. Terrible attitudes by people that have, you know, disparities and suffered disparities they themselves. Maybe you didn't grow up, you know, in a great neighborhood. I didn't, right? I was a product of Logan Square, you know, on the verge of two fighting gang wars every day, running back and forth from school, you know, 14 blocks, counting the minutes, seeing how fast I could jet. The lack of cultural competency. A difference between people that are African-American and people that are Africa and people that are Mexican and Puerto Rican and white and black and up and down and in and out that don't know how to treat you any better. I'm a North Sider. They're a South Sider. I think I could talk to you this way. I could think I could talk to you that way. I'm your professor. You're my student. I'm going to change this so you don't get the A. So less people get the A, and I could show you I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to grade my tests when I want. You know, I'm going to get back to you when I want. Lack of information, misinformation. I appreciate you. IT, things were slow, things were down. Processes are slow, not just with the internet, but with answers, with replies. A quick no, no follow-up. Lots of these things are in the negative, but they're changeable. Now let's go to the other side of it, the positive thing. We go to school here because it's cost-effective. Because it's the best thing since sliced bread. Because it's flexible for all our classes. Because aside from the staff that a few weeks ago held a meeting that was called the Repression Forum and made students hear slanderous remarks, and you know who you are because you are in the audience right now, and yelled boisterous comments and made us feel unwelcome, I remind you, sirs, that we pay you to teach us. You don't pay us to go to school here. And that has been accounted for. This is an educationally sound school. It has great over-the-top professors, professors that care more than just in the classroom. They have passion. They have compassion. They go all out. We have small classes, small enough to know everybody, small enough to have great opportunities to research, to travel, to be recognized for scholarship, for development, to become more professional, to become more personal, to become a future community stakeholder, and also to give back to our community. I came here in 2010 with a 1.8 GPA. Humberto Rivera got me in. I was a top performer, million-dollar producer at the school, at where I had worked at. I worked for four-profit schools, right? I wasn't dumb. I just quit. That's it, right? I just quit. Under the pressure of going to an almost all-white school, I succumbed to it. I didn't know when to quit until it was too late to do it. came to CSU, last chance. Older guy, wanted to finish going to school, wanted to finish my degree, wanted to go to medical school. 2011, graduated all honors wide with the President's Cup. I'm not bragging about my academics. I'm bragging about what you did that helped a kid like me that shouldn't have been made it, have made it, that could have been incarcerated or dead because that was the path that I was on. Then I went to graduate school because my daddy got sick and I missed the medical school limit. And then I did well. And now I have the opportunity to graduate with all honors as a graduate in a Master's of Public Health program that I have been working in the community. And those of you that know me, the only reason that I got sick was because I was burning the candle at both ends and I didn't know when to quit either. All right? All of this is the story of every single student that comes to this school. The only thing is I'm not a female and I don't have any children. But we come here because this is our house, because we appreciate you. And I thank you. In fact, I want to applaud you for what you passed today, for the cyberbullying policy, for protecting us, for everything that you do, but especially for that. Because in particular, when I came and charged and met everybody, I just didn't think that was possible. I was prepared today to say something totally different and show you that my background as a Mexicano, we come back from revolutionaries, and I was gonna just walk out and show you that if I mean nothing, I ain't gonna say something. But I was flabbergasted. I'm speechless. My heart is filled. I can't believe it. And I'm speaking for the students, not just me, the students. Now, we have other students that are misled, and that's okay because you make that choice. Everybody here makes that choice. But it is not acceptable that you in this room that mislead those students continue to have access to those students, because what you are creating in this environment is that we know students that come here already know enough disruption and dysfunction. And you are teaching them and training and molding their minds to doubt and hate the institution that is going to provide them with a top-notch education and an ability to be marketable in corporate or as an entrepreneur, which is what they have done with students like myself, which have access to resources and research and honors and scholarship. So tell me something. Which is the path that you want to take? Do you want to continue to be a part of this great university? Or do you just want to leave on your own accord? Personally, I would prefer that you would just leave. Now, the other ones. When you slander, the freedom of speech does not protect you. You can lie and defy and cry and say this and say that. But in reality, when the Board of Elections, the first time I ran as a Board of Trustee, I was angry at the administration for just dissolving it because I was the only one that ran a clean race. And the same children here that stand up and abuse this right that friends of mine I've buried that fought in the armed forces, fought for your freedom of speech, not your freedom to lie. They dissolved it. I ran a clean race. I had to redo it. You didn't like that you lost the first time. Sore loser. Second time, sore loser. I'm here, and I've done everything I possibly can for the students, and I have been a strong advocate. And, you know, I'm not a wallflower behind closed doors either. And that's all I'm going to say about you, because you mean very little to the most positive aspects of this university. And finally, in solidarity, referring to the ties in society that bind together as one, I remember it as a song that says, "Blessed be the tie that binds." Look around you. We are minorities. We are human beings. We are people here in this world that every day people die from starvation, from depression, from lack of resources. And what are we doing fighting each other when we have running water, access to food, access to TV and radio? Read a book, do something, go out in the community. This is what CSU has taught me and the voices I speak for. On behalf of all of the students at CSU, I want to give you all a great big hug, a great big thank you. I want to tell you that you are welcome at our houses. Well, I don't know about theirs, but that we appreciate what you do, and that it is time to cast light on the positives of CSU and bring more students access here instead of being those that increase the disparities that exist in our community by misleading and misinforming and deceiving our students and putting us at risk. You don't do that because you don't bite the hand that feeds you. I thank this board for the ability to serve on it. I thank our president, Dr. Watson. I support you in your efforts, not only as the mission, but in what you do, because my man, I am so impressed today of everything that every individual sitting next to me has done. I am proud that we have gotten an HSI, and you know, that'll increase diversity for everything. We have an agenda. Thank you for supporting students going to this school, and thank you for letting me have a small piece of it. May God bless you, all of you, even those that oppose me. Live a long life, disease-free. Find peace. Amen.
Thank you. We'll now have our foundation update.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, trustees. I find myself a little astounded having to follow that speech and report. But as we say on my side of town, more power to you. I'd like to just give you a quick update on where things are with the foundation. Our total revenue to date is $1.6 million. We have our expenditures are a little less than that. We have excess revenue of about $31,000 from our expenses. Out of our expenditures, we've provided about $147,000 in scholarships, particularly. We also have spent about $679,000 specifically relating to our CRCP program. The CRCP program, as you know, is a program that's a joint program between Chicago State and four other institutions and UPS. Late last night, I got word that from the state that we will be receiving $2 million grant this year in support of the program, Dr. Watson. So we're meeting this afternoon. When I leave here, I'll be going down to Lombard to meet with the staff from the other institutions so that we can finalize our budgets and finalize our materials for getting the program support and our check in. This year marks the 20th anniversary of the Friends of CSU Gala. So we are very excited about it when looking forward to it. This year, the event will be held on September 19th, 2014. We're in the process of identifying our honoree. We have several honorees that we've laid out that we want to go after. We are also negotiating with J. Anthony Brown to be the MC for the event and provide some comedic support for the event. We will also be looking at a concert part of the event. We're talking to the Whispers, Jeffrey Osborne, and Stephanie Mills. Not together, but one of the three to be our entertainment for the night. The Resource Development Committee of the board is meeting in 2 weeks, and we will finalize our budgets and our goals for the event. That's my report. I'll be happy to entertain any specific questions.
Questions?
I have a question for you, Mr. Kitay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Approximately how many Latino students have benefited from the foundation? I know that I was one of them, and I want to thank you for that. I would have not finished my undergrad without that help from the foundation. But do you know by any chance, or can give me a guesstimate of either the amount of Latino students or what students did benefit from the foundation?
This year, we've provided $17,000 for Latino students specifically. Dr. Watson spoke to me about the move to have the HSI effort. So I spoke to the board. The board identified $50,000 out of foundation funds to be used to support specifically Latino students.
Thank you so much.
To date, we have not expended any of that money yet, but it is available to be expended specifically for Latino students.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
We'll now have our president's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Board of Trustees, for your service